hello again, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. We'll be talking about video game and video game music, and I hope you have enjoyed this episode I've got lined up for you today. Okay, so anyway, I hope you enjoyed the last episode where I talked about state of play and the Irish gaming industry. But if you recall before that, I had an episode where I kind of tried to vaguely have the theme of violence in video games interwoven in the episode. However, there were a couple of things left over, and also there was some interesting angles that I thought of. So I think that I'll just continue that theme just to finish off the topic, as you'd suspect. Now, when people talk about violence in video games, the reaction is depressingly the same all over. Oh, dear gosh, fuck you. Video games are so freaking violent these days, blah blah blah, teaching people to kill. I mean, to be honest, a lot of that thankfully has died down. A lot of, you know, the gaming used to have like a lot of very severe critics. I mean, Duke Nukem got banned because there was a shooting that, you know, ended up getting tied to it because of political stuff. And a lot of vocal critics of it have either, you know, fallen out of the picture, like Jack Thompson, of course, who kind of got himself disbarred by a lawyer by filing gay pornography along with a court filing on a completely unrelated charge, which kind of implies that he wasn't quite mentally balanced in going after video games in the first place. And even someone like Hillary Clinton, who at one point acted like video games were like the biggest freaking threat to the world and kids that ever made, she barely even talks about video games right now, which kind of makes you think either she wasn't serious about it in the first place, or that, you know, she thinks it's serious but decides there's more important things to do, or she was just a politician who was playing with curry fever and not actually thinking about it. Actually, to be honest, that's actually my opinion on what really, I mean, people can have many opinions on Hillary Clinton, but for me, the reason was she was willing to have a lot of action taken over a subject that she knew very little about, and that just turned me off. But away from politics, the simple fact of the matter is that when I was talking with someone about video game violence recently, I put it pretty simply. If a game has an 18s label on it, as an age rated for 18s plus on it, then that label is there for a reason, and pretty much that's it. If a game is violent, yeah, it can be violent. So can films or TV shows. So can, like, people were comparing it to the Saw franchise. So can pretty much everything else. And I mean, to be honest, I'll have to say that a lot of the time the violence isn't making a meaningful point, though Spec Ops The Line is a gigantic exception to that rule. It actually takes the violence and actually questions it, and a lot of other games do something similar to that, but that's the way it goes. But at the same time, I mean, like every other medium, there's violence and it's just accepted. You know, you don't show it to kids, you show more happy things to kids. And the truth is, games don't, most studies, there have been a lot of studies and studies and studies. Recently, there was a longitudinal study that, like, followed children for many, many years and determined that games just didn't really have that much of an impact in violence. In fact, there was a study done several years ago that actually noticed that, you know, as video games became more popular, of course, there was a gigantic decline in crime at the United States at the same point. And they even sort of threw the point that when they were creating another government thing, they made a list of all of the factors that were meant to lead to violence. Video games got lumped in with violent media. It wasn't even in its own category, and it was so far down the list. In fact, here's an interesting thing. On that list, I don't have the name of it right now, but they made a list of all things most leading to violence, and much higher on that list was actually, you know, being male. So apparently being male has more of an, you know, being male has basically more of an influence on whether you're going to be violent than video games do, which is kind of depressing and kind of, I'm not really sure what that means. But it also kind of means that, you know, people aren't passing laws against people not being male. So I guess it's just kind of crazy situation to be in. And it also kind of makes sense. Anytime you hear about a shooting or, you know, a great shooting, I mean, it's always guys who are shooting. It's always guys who are shooting up schools and everything. If we want true sexual equality, more women are going to have to take part in mass killings. I'm just putting that out there. So, roundabout, we should get back to our original topic, Grand Theft Auto. Now, Grand Theft Auto 5, I had another discussion with someone about that. People say, you know, you get into a car, hire prostitutes, take them, have sex with them and kill them. I kind of pointed out that no one actually has to do that. No, you can pretty much go through an entire game of Grand Theft Auto without even touching a prostitute. I mean, Grand Theft Auto, of course, has missions which you kind of have to do. Well, you don't have to do it, but if you want to play more of the game and get more cool features, you have to do it. So it's effectively the same thing. And rarely ever do you actually, you know, directly cause harm to people who are in, you know, or prostitutes or anything. And so I was kind of saying that, you know, like, if people want to, like, go around and beat up, like, pedestrians, it's kind of their own decision and their own motivation to do that. Most of the time, if you're in a mission, you have to kill someone. It's someone who's basically dubious. It's on the level of, you know, a crime thriller or an anti-hero movie or something. But I'm getting off track here because I was actually thinking of one specific mission in Grand Theft Auto V that I was actually only going to talk about because there was a really great song. Yes, this is BitNote. I am actually talking about music, not just completely going on and on about various video game related issues. In this case, the song was actually a pretty nice song that suddenly played during a mission. Like I said, missions are scripted events. You have to go through them, and they usually contain several different stages. So, it was a really nice song. It wasn't original to the game, but I decided to make an exception to this because it was a good song, and Rockstar did a good job in discovering it. And I started to think a bit about the mission that leads up to it. And it actually works because the song relates well to the mission, and the mission works well in the whole storyline and character development of the game, even though the game kind of has inconsistent characters. So what happens? Well, you basically play, I mean, you play three different characters in Grand Theft Auto. You have Trevor, Franklin, and Michael. So essentially, you're probably thinking, you know, well, do they all, like, have little stories or backgrounds? Well, yeah, they've all got stories that progress through the game a little inconsistently. With Michael, you're basically kind of like an ex-criminal, and of course, this is the start of the game, so, you know, that don't last long. But you've tried to be living a relatively normal life with an actual family, and, you know, you've got a family in this game. You've got a wife who's really annoying you and constantly stresses you out. You've got a kid who spends all his time in front of smoking weed and in front of video games. And you've got a daughter who's completely obsessed with celebrity life and becoming a supermodel. So, you know, a typical dysfunctional family. And this is... basically, a couple of the missions actually revolve around you doing fatherly stuff. I mean, this is Grand Theft Auto, which all the critics say is just mindless and empty entertainment. No, actually, this game is suddenly having to you perform some basic family drama. In fact, one of them has you basically help out your daughter, although it ends up getting involved in a jet ski race involving a shootout. But, you know, let's not get into that right now. So one mission basically says, did somebody say yoga? You return to your house, and you start the game with a very nice house, which is unusual, because most of these games you kind of start with nothing and build up to having a nice house, but, you know, whatever. And it's nice for, you know, a game to start you off well with once. And you come back to the house, and suddenly your wife, who you've already found out has been cheating on you with a tennis coach, it's kind of part of the drama, is now doing yoga. So they say, you know, you're so stressed, and the character is stressed, why did you do yoga? So that's what you do. You are playing Grand Theft Auto V, a game which has a criminal act in the very title. You start a mission that could do whatever you want, and it turns out the mission starts with you doing yoga. Technically involves you moving the analog sticks and pulling to get into position and pulling the triggers to breathe. It's kind of numbing stuff, but it's kind of weird. Yes, this game does have yoga in it. You know, bullet point right there, Grand Theft Auto V. Hijack cars, blow up stuff, do yoga. And yes, so the mission proceeds okay. You do your yoga, you control your breathing, you try to listen to the people talking to you and try to do the tree position and try to make sure everything is mirrored so that your chakra are aligned and stuff. And finally it ends, and then basically the yoga instructor starts trying to help practice, and you're doing it. You're going, okay, I guess that was yoga. So then the yoga instructor starts trying to do practice with your wife in an animated cutscene, and then suddenly the instructor seems to get very close to your wife, so Michael gets pissed off, pushes him into a pool, and kind of screws that up. Okay, so I think mission is over. Not quite. It turns out now your character decides that now is the best thing to do is to try to do some bonding with this distant son who just constantly mopes and yells at him. So that's what you do. You know, your son is going out to a fast food place and you decide to go with him, driving him down, having a conversation and speaking about fatherly stuff. Okay, that's kind of, you get down to the place, and as you're coming back, he speaks to a guy about getting, you know, one of those shakes and stuff, and gives one to his father, and it all seems kind of shady, but you're not paying much attention, and you're heading back trying to patch things up, trying to, you know, I mean, because you know, you kind of feel for the guy, you want him to get on with his son, you know, you want there to be a nice thing here so it feels sort of stable, so it's not completely going crazy. And so he takes a sip from his shake, and things start getting weird. It turns out you're kind of tripping. You suddenly find yourself wearing your underpants, flying over the city of Los Santos, or at least falling very slowly and being able to glide and control, and finding some weird psychedelic world below you. Everything is bright colors. Everything's crazy. And meanwhile, this song plays in the background, you know, a very melodic, out-of-tune sort of song. Well, meanwhile, you can hear voices, voices from your family, from you, from your therapy session. Yeah, yeah, he has actually therapy in this game. It's how he deals with his issues and concerns and stuff. And just basically, you're flying through the city, Technicolor, hearing voices from your head as thoughts swirl around in your head. Before finally, after you're kind of going crazy and, you know, you as a player are trying to control him around, seeing how far around the city of Los Santos can you fly before this whole trip ends. Before finally you wake up in your underpants, in a patch of grass near your home, you make it back to your house, possibly by carjacking, who knows, and find that tragically, you know, what you've done has been, what has gone crazy, been the straw that broke the camel's back, and now your family have walked down on you, basically. It's just a big house, completely empty, and a note from your wife saying that they can't take it anymore. They're worried about your friends, the violence, and now your son doing drugs. And basically, they need some time to think. Grand Theft Auto 5, everyone. Yeah, it's a pretty crazy mission. The whole, it's actually kind of funny because the whole tripping and psychedelic colors and flying seems more out of Saints Row, which took the surreal direction, which was more the surreal attempt at more surreal and crazy Grand Theft Auto 5. But it's kind of an interesting mission. Like I said, it's some of the threads in Grand Theft Auto 5 are hard to follow because you're dealing with multiple characters at a time. So maybe one mission deals with your family, another might deal with something more brutal. But it's kind of a weird mission. It's kind of fun. And it kind of just shows how much the whole family plays an issue in this game. And trust me, that's not the only family issue in the game. Some of them get a little more crazy, but there you go. And time for the actual music, because yes, I should be talking about the music in this game. The music is that played was Shine a Light. It was originally composed by the C90s, but the version of the song that plays in the game is this Flight Facilities remix. So I'll play that for you now. And just, you know, while listening to it and the thing, just imagine Michael flying in his underpants through the sky of Los Santos in a psychedelic world, thinking of all the issues, the mistakes, the elements of his life as he all desperately tries to put it all together. I hope you enjoy the song. And as I said, that was Shine a Light. It was the Flight Facilities remix of a C90 track. Flight Facilities is an Australian Indo-Electro DJ duo, and it is from the, well, used in the video game Grand Theft Auto V, which was developed by Rockstar Games, you know, Rockstar North and a bunch of other Rockstar companies and everything else. So, moving on from a game note that's typically associated with violence and music that involves electronic kind of surreal tracks, let's move on to a game that that is associated with violence, has some electronic surreal tracks. I speak of Hotline Miami. This is the polar opposite of Grand Theft Auto V, where it was with Grand Theft Auto V, you can measure the budget in tens of millions and talk about a gigantic team from all over the world, you know, making this whole game for several years and everything. Hotline Miami is an indie game, so it's made largely by one guy, although with help from others, as often happens, and basically released on low key for various different digital platforms. So what is Hotline Miami? Well, it kind of takes place in kind of 80s Miami, effectively. It's got a surreal soundtrack. Once again, we're going into the whole Technicolor, vivid, almost gaudy color schemes. And basically, you are a guy who's doing a lot of terrible, terrible things. The terrible things you are doing is largely killing a lot of people, and it's very frantic action. Now, generally, the guys are bad guys, mostly, like Russian mobsters and the like, and you're not quite sure where you're doing this because you are literally answering messages on an answering machine, and a bunch is giving you code and messages of where to go, and not quite who to kill, but you figure that out when you get there. And essentially it's just you and a top-down perspective going through this whole building doing all this stuff. Now everything is kind of surreal, gaudy and exaggerated, so it comes across almost comic book graphic sort of stuff rather than but it does get disturbing, and the music doesn't help. I think the music almost sort of seems to psych you out, so suddenly you're not quite sure of yourself, you're not quite sure of what everything is going on, and suddenly you're finding yourself doing all this terrible stuff in the video game, and you're kind of getting a bit disassociated, and it's just, it's kind of a crazy and surreal thing. I mean, if anyone said that video games, it's kind of a whole surreal thing and quite an experience, especially one part where you just suddenly start getting crazy about it. But I thought to myself, you know, this game is kind of popular and a lot of people play it. Is it just because of the violence or what? And I actually just looked at it a little closer, thought about the game. I mean, it's a good straightforward game. You control it from a top-down perspective. You see the layout. There is a bit of strategy in who you attack first and stuff. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's not quite the violence that makes the game appealing. And this is the same of tons of games. There's actually quite a few games out there, like Manhunt, where they really do overdo the violence in the most way possible. Gore, blood, everything. But a lot of gamers just shrug their shoulders and go, yeah, it's not really a good game. Because gamers like games, surprisingly enough. They like challenges. They like stratagems. You know, they don't just like getting endless amounts of gore. And when I thought about Hotline Miami, I realized that the key to it is just how frantic it is, it's and how strategic it is and how challenging it is. What happens is that basically you're in any game where you defeat a number of enemies, normally there's something that tips the odds in your favor. Either you're a superhero, or you got regenerative health, or you have abilities that the enemies don't have, blah blah blah. In Hotline Miami, you're not really that much stronger or anything else than the enemies do. You can carry about one weapon, so can the enemies. Sometimes you'll have a gun and they won't, which puts in your favor, but sometimes it's the opposite, which puts in theirs. Sometimes you see a bit more of the screen and you can also throw items, but you've got the element of surprise. But overall, in a fair fight with you against a lot of enemies, you know, they're about as likely to take you down as anything else. You know, it's almost realistic. And I realized that that's kind of the genius of the game, because the odds are stacked against you at the start, because you don't have some huge bonus that will help you defeat the enemies, because you actually have to beat through the level, and you have to clear out each level before you win. But you have to clear out each level to win. And this means being incredibly strategic, or just the best you can be. Do you go frantic? Do you try to aim? Do you try to keep people up by surprise? You try to work out this whole choreography, a whole dance, but then things go wrong and you have to improvise by sheer reaction. And it's a thrill and it's a rush, and it's just it's you basically against the world, and like 9 out of 10 then you'll get killed even if you know the level. Suddenly you go up, you'll try the strategy, but you get shot, and then you instantly restart and try again and again and again. And it's this whole frantic thing. It's like you lose the level several times. You keep trying new strategies, you keep trying new things, and finally when you beat the level, it's like, yes, you know, I did it. And then you're on to the next level and you try the same thing again. So this is kind of like what a lot of games are actually about, but completely gets underrated. And it's just about the frantic challenge, about, you know, really throwing yourself into it and just having a hectic and just trying to really, you know, get through the level and just do everything it has. And I think I'll just play some music from the game now. But, you know, that's something that's not always associated with games. It's the challenge, the interaction between you and everything, and just beating the level, and even against all the odds and all the techniques and all the freaking improvisations you had to pull off in order to get through beating the level, its own reward. It has a pretty crazy soundtrack, like I said, electronic and a bit of synth, and I'll just play one for you now. This is Crystals by Moon. Like I said, it is from Hotline Miami by Devolver Digital. The beat. So essentially that was Crystals by Moon, or M-O-O-N, because, you know, that's going to be a pain to Google. And Moon is a Boston musician who is now in LA, and that's about as much as I could figure out about that artist, except for they composed also a bunch of other stuff. I said that Hotline Miami was by Devolver Digital, that they're actually published by Devolver Digital. It was actually developed by Denaton Games, and that actually it wasn't just one person who developed it, was two. It was Jonathan Soderstrom and Dennis Wedin. So, I think that I'll leave. That's about all we have time for at the moment. I'm going to leave you with one other track from Hotline Miami called A New Morning, which is the credits theme, and it was composed by Eric Shuriki, and he composed other music from other indie games such as Splunky and Ridiculous Fishing. So, I think that I hope you've enjoyed this topic today and how I've tried to manage it and completely manhandled the whole topic the way through the show. But overall, I think we've all learned something today, or at least we listened to some kind of weird music. And at the end of the day, isn't that all that matters? I don't know. But if it is, then I'm doing pretty much okay. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening. I leave you with A New Morning by Eric Shuriki.